understand that.
No, no, it's like making a false step and you didn't understand that semester.
You don't understand that. Well, I might be, but...
All right, hello. So, what we're going to do today is prove the weak Mordell Bay theorem, but we're really proving the strong Mordell Bay theorem because last time Andre proved that weak implies strong. So we're going to prove the Mordell Bay theorem, and I think we'll be able to finish that. So the notes are the last two pages, page 127 and 128 of chapter 12. And I mean, I noticed a number of typos in them when I was looking through them this morning, but nothing mathematical, just missing letters and words. So here's the theorem. Oh, by the way, what we'll do on Thursday is I'll talk a lot about the Bertrand-Sorensen-Dieger conjecture and what more precisely is known about it and why. So I'll kind of give you some hint of the state of the art in research on the arithmetic of elliptic curves. And that will be a nice culmination for the course. Also, you'll notice that I'm not handing out a homework assignment right now. There's not going to be a homework assignment due next Thursday. Hello. So next Thursday, instead of having a homework assignment, I want you to email a draft of your project to me. You won't get a grade on it. It's purely for your benefit. But I think you'll find it beneficial to write something down and then send it to me. Then I can give you feedback. It often makes it a lot easier for you to do a project that I like. Let's write that down. Okay, so the goal for today is to prove this theorem. E over K be an elliptic curve over a number field. Then the group E of K is a finitely generated abelian group. So I'll give a proof of this in this generality using the techniques from Galois cohomology and group cohomology that we've developed so far, along with the algebraic number theory we've developed, and assuming that Andre did what he told me did last Thursday. And one thing I was going to omit was a proof of the S-unit theorem. So we proved Dirichlet's unit theorem that the units is an abelian group of rank r plus s minus 1. So I think I will actually prove Dirichlet's S-unit theorem as well. It's not really that much more difficult, so I'll do that today in addition. So that will remove kind of a non-trivial gap from the sketch of proof I was going to give. So I'll give a fairly complete proof of this, modulus some small details. One remark, this is also true over finite extensions of... Also true over... In a function field context, so over finite extensions of the field of rational functions in one variable over a finite field. So that's another context in which you can consider the same problem. And you have an elliptic curve, say, over fp of t, then this group is finitely generated. So the proof is really almost identical. The only thing is that you have to develop algebraic number theory for this. So there's some additional work there. And I won't prove that at all. Okay, so proof. So I'm not going to just write out one humongously long proof. So what we'll do, it's broken up into a couple of steps. And I think in order to make everything more motivated, I'm going to sketch the last step right now, and then do the other steps that build up to that. Otherwise, you won't know where we're going as much as you might otherwise. So, let's say we have a positive integer n. Let's assume it's greater than or equal to 2. Then, instead of trying to prove this is finitely generated, instead, consider E of k mod n E of k. If we prove this is finitely generated, well, since it's a torsion group, that's the same as proving this is finite. So if we prove this is finite, and combine that with the fact that the torsion subgroup is finite, then we get that the whole thing, well, and combine that with the height computations that Andre did, then you get that the whole thing is finite. So consider this, if finite, then really all you need is the height part, then calculations with heights imply that E of k is finitely generated. Hopefully you remember this from last time. If you don't, then simply replace the statement by the statement that E of k mod n E of k is a finite group for all positive integers n, and that's the one I'm proving. But that does have, as a fairly elementary but non-trivial implication, that E of k itself is finitely generated. Questions? Comments? Okay, so that's what you need to prove is finitely generated. Now, just like in Coomer theory, it's really good to consider the following exact sequence. So here, this is the multiplication of n exact sequence associated to an elliptic curve. So here, this is the multiplication by n map, and I've fixed an integer n. And here, this is the n torsion of the elliptic curve. So this is the kernel of multiplication by n. And multiplication by n is surjective. I think we may have discussed this a little bit before, but the idea here is that this multiplication by n, this is an algebraic map, and it's given by, you know, a pair, an explicit algebraic function in x and y. It's given by two of those. And if you have a point over here, to find some point that maps to it, it's just a matter of solving some algebraic equations. And the solutions exist. Because you should think of this as, you might want to just think of the exact sequence of points like this. So if ever you have a point here, you can find a point that lifts it. So, let's see, one special case where you could think about this would be when n equals 2. It's a very concrete case. So what you could do is write down explicitly what multiplication by 2 is on an elliptic curve, and then you have to show that everything is 2 times something else. So you could do that, and it wouldn't be that hard. An even simpler situation is, this is not about an elliptic curve, but consider the map x goes to x squared. That's a surjective map from q bar to q bar, right? If you have something, you can always find a square root. And this is, x goes to x squared, that's an algebraic map from the affine line to itself, and it's surjective, and likewise, this map is surjective. It's very, very similar to that. It's just the fact that you're working over an algebraically closed field that gives this surjectivity. So you have an exact sequence like this. And this is completely the analog of what we did over here with Coomer theory, where we started with a field that, first we started with a general field, and we wrote down this exact sequence, 1, mu n bar, and k bar star, and this was nth powering, and k bar star. are than one. And I mean, K bar is of course just the same thing as Q bar, because K is a number field, and this map is surjective. So the analog of Kummer theory, but for an elliptic curve, is over here. It's the same sequence. So in Kummer theory, what we did is we made the special assumption that mu n was contained in K. So in fact, when you it just simplified things when you consider the long exact sequence. You got 1, then mu n. This is the long exact sequence of h n k bar over k group or Galois cohomology. We get k star the nth Pauli mapping in k star. And here you get Pauli k bar over k to mu n, which is just a group of order n. And then the next thing is 0 by Hilbert's theorem by me. So this was Kummer theory. It said that the abelian extensions of k of degree n are the same as k star mod k star to the n. And for this you needed that mu n is contained in k. Okay, do the analog over here. Let's assume the analog of mu n being contained in k, namely that E n k is equal to E n q bar or k bar. Let's put q bar. So all of the n torsion of your elliptic curve is defined over the base field k. Then, again, apply Galois cohomology, and you get 0 en, this group has order n squared, then e of k, then multiplication by n, e of k, and the next thing in the sequence, just like over there, is going to be a Hom because of our assumption. So k bar over k. But I think somehow it's going to be better to use k bar. Doesn't make any difference. Gal k bar over k, and then e. And again, just think of this as homomorphism from here to a group that has a structure z mod n z squared. So this group is isomorphic to z mod n z squared. And let's see. So stop there. Now, here, if you just look at this exact sequence, you see that E of K mod N E of K embeds in here. This embeds into this poem. So whenever you have an element of E of K mod N E of K, you get from it a homomorphism from Gal Q bar over K, or what's almost the same thing, you get an abelian extension of K of exponent N, or dividing N. And how do you do that? Well, if you have an element here, I'll tell you in a minute the recipe that gives you the homomorphism. But once you have the homomorphism, take the kernel of the homomorphism, that's a subgroup of the Galois group, and you take the fixed field of that. And that's an abelian extension because, it's an extension. It has Galois group that's a subgroup, namely the image of this homomorphism in En. So whenever you have a point P in E of K, say a class of a point in E of K mod N E of K, you can associate to that first the homomorphism phi from the Galois group of K. En, first you get a homomorphism, but then to the homomorphism you can associate an abelian extension. The abelian extension being q bar fixed by the kernel of phi. And this is an abelian extension of k with Galois group isomorphic to Gal q bar over K modulo the subgroup that corresponds to this extension. But that's the group modulo the kernel, which is isomorphic to the image, imageify, which is contained in this abelian group that's isomorphic to z mod n z squared. So anytime you have, just going back to the original reduction of the theorem, anytime you have an element here, you get, via this Galois cohomology process, an abelian extension of your base field K. Remember, understanding the abelian extensions of a field is something that people are extremely good at in number theory, algebraic number theory. So class field theory is about, and Kummer theory is about it in the special case when you have the nth roots of unity in your base field. So first, let me tell you how this map works. So this map is given by something called the connecting homomorphism delta, and it's very explicit. And this works in general for any long exact sequence of group cohomology or Galois cohomology. But the way it works is as follows. You have an element of E of K, and you want to use it to construct a one cocycle, or in this case, in this special case, a homomorphism. What you do is you take that element and you lift it. You have this surjective, well, this map isn't surjective on K points, but on K bar points, on Q bar points, or on the original module before you took H0, it was surjective. So you take your point here, and you can lift it to something here, which explicitly for a point means choosing an nth, you're choosing a point Q so that n times Q is equal to P. So given P, in here, you find Q, not in here, not in E of K, but in E of K bar, such that Q maps to P. That is to say, P is equal to N times Q. So you could think Q is a choice of an nth root of P. Really, it's not a root, but it's something that has the property that N times it is equal to P. So you make a choice of such a Q, and now the amazing thing is that you can use it to make a one cocycle, as follows. So if we have our P, we have a choice of Q such that N times Q is equal to P. Now look how you make a cocycle. So the cocycle is sigma maps to sigma of Q minus Q. So what we have to do first to verify that this really defines a one cocycle, we have to check that this actually lands in E square brackets N. I mean, a priori, it's just the difference of two points on the elliptic curve. So this is taking place in E of K bar. But I claim that, in fact, this difference is an element of E square brackets N. And that's one thing. And then the other thing, just because this looks like a cocycle, remember, this sort of looks like a co-boundary. But it's not a one co-boundary. It's not a trivial element of this. The reason is because Q is not itself an E square brackets N. That's what you would need for it to be a trivial element there. So it's something that looks like a one co-boundary, and therefore, it's no surprise that when you check the one cocycle condition, it really works. And in fact, this does define a one cocycle. The important thing, though, that we have to check is that it really gives an element of the n torsion. So to do that, you multiply it by n and see that you get 0. Now, if you multiply it by n and use the n multiplication by n commutes with sigma, you see that, well, just take this and multiply by n times sigma q minus q, that's the same thing as sigma nq minus nq. However, nq is p, so this is sigma of p minus p, and by hypothesis, our element p is an E of k. So sigma of p is equal to p. This is p minus p, and that's 0. So indeed, sigma of q minus q, though a priori it's just an E of k bar, is in fact an E k bar square bracket n. So we really do get a one cocycle, which in this special case, because we're assuming the Galois action is trivial, that is to say that the n-torsion is all defined over K, this one cocycle is in fact a homomorphism. And that's how you get over here. So, in order to prove the weak Mordell Bay theorem, here's what I need to do. Well, there are two things. One, I need to show there are only finitely many extensions of K of this very special form. Namely, they're abelian, and they have Galois group contained in here. And, well, there's an additional condition they will satisfy, as we'll see. They're unramified outside of a certain finite set of primes. The only primes where this particular extension, which is constructed from a point on the elliptic curve, the only primes that can ramify there are primes of bad reduction for the elliptic curve and primes that divide n, where n is this n right here. So if you take the abelian extensions of exponent, so that their Galois group is, their abelian, their Galois group is killed by n, and their ramifications bounded, amazingly enough, there are only finitely many of them. And this follows from a slight generalization of Dirichlet's unit theorem, essentially. And I mean, there's an argument that we'll have to give. So one thing we'll do is we'll check that there are only finitely many exponent and abelian extensions unramified outside a finite set of primes. Extensions of K unramified outside a finite set of primes. And it'll be very nice for you to see how you prove this, because it's very much a kind of seeing this sort of theorem proved is kind of a bridge between the sort of algebraic number theory we did in the earlier part of the course and the more advanced algebraic number theory you might do in an advanced grad course. Because this gives a hint at class field theory and understanding, you know, the sort of question. If you have a number field, classify all extensions as some property. That's really different than what we've done so far. So we'll prove this. And the other thing we need, so once we have this, by the way, we will know that E of K mod any of K is a finite set because, I mean, in the case when this assumption is satisfied. Okay, so if we have this, and you know this statement over here, and you know, so I guess I need to state that explicitly, that I'll give a name to this field. It's associated to the point P, so I'll simply call it L sub P. It's an extension of K associated with P. So we also need the claim that L sub P is unramified outside a certain finite list of primes, namely n and primes of bad reduction for the elliptic curve. So the discriminant of a Weierstrass equation would do bad reduction. So you have this field. We will see that it is unramified outside n and primes of bad reduction. There are only finitely many such fields because we also have a constraint on the Galois group. So that gives that E of K mod any of K must be finite because each element injective, there's an injective map from here to the set of, well, okay, let's see, is there any, you have two different points that give the same field, so you have to worry a little bit. But you can only have finitely many points. I want to worry for a second. So this map is injective, but the map that goes from homomorphisms to fields, this is a set theoretic map, goes from these homomorphisms to the corresponding field extensions. So field extensions of K, and the map again is given a homomorphism phi, you send it to Q bar fixed by the kernel of phi. So you could have several different homomorphisms that have the same fixed field, right? Because you can have different homomorphisms with the same kernel. Since if you have a homomorphism from here to here, you could compose it with an automorphism of E square brackets N, and you get another homomorphism from here to here that has exactly the same kernel. So there is, this map is not injective, but the ambiguity is just that you could have more than one homomorphism with the same kernel, and that ambiguity is just the same as it's just given by the automorphisms of E square brackets N. So this map has finite degree. There are only finitely many elements here that map to the same field extension. Because you only have finitely many different homomorphisms with the same kernel from here to here. So the fact that there are only finitely many extensions with this property, combined with the fact that all of the extensions you get from a given point have that property, or from any point on the elliptic curve have that property, gives you that there are only finitely many points. Okay, so I need to prove the statement and that statement. And it'd also be nice
if I didn't have to make this assumption. But in fact, we've already proved enough to see that that assumption doesn't really cause us any problems. It follows from the inference sequence that if you can prove the statement under this assumption, then you can prove the statement for any elliptic curve over any number field. And here's how.
Suppose you have an elliptic curve U over a number field K, and we make no further assumptions about the n torsion of the elliptic curve being defined over K. Where n, and we also have an integer n, greater than or equal to 2. Now here's a proposition. If, let M be K adjoin the x and y coordinates of the elements of E square brackets n. So you take all n torsion points, all n squared of them, all points of order dividing n, and you adjoin the x coordinates and y coordinates to K, and you get a big Galois extension of K, which we'll call M. Okay, then the following implication holds. If E of M mod n E of M is finite, then the same is true about E of K mod M E of K. Then E of K mod M E of K also finite. Is also finite. Okay, does anybody see how to prove this? I remember, none of this is at all relevant to a proposition.
The map like this signal here.
Okay. That's a good idea.
So for me,
sure.
K mod M of K.
Yes, yes. Okay, let me write down the idea. So we have E of K mod M E of K, and that using this map delta is embedded in H1K.
Directly to your M mod M and M.
What's M? Is that just
M is N. I'm sorry. Yeah. Thank you.
No, I mean directly into
oh.
The map to your M mod M and M.
Okay, hold on. Just have the map.
So we have to show that the kernel is finite.
Right.
So it takes a loop P
mm-hmm.
in the intersection of E of K and N of M.
Okay.
Write it as N times something in E of M. Map it to the element in the Galois, to the element that points sigma in the Galois group of M over K.
Okay, such a P maps to the
lambda P, which stands sigma. Sigma of Q minus Q.
Okay. And there are, so you've defined a homomorphism from the kernel.
What's the
theoretical finite
from?
So the kernel's finite. So you want.
First, because if two such maps, lambda p and lambda p prime, are the same,
mm-hmm.
every sigma must fix the difference.
Okay, so
lambda.
Wait, two such maps are the same, every sigma must fix the difference.
Do you mean two maps
then
for different
Q
place?
Minus P will belong to E of K.
Wait, hold on. So, wait, what are you proving now?
So to each
so
P?
Wait, first I should say, so you've defined a homomorphism from the kernel of this. The kernel of this thing is E of K intersect N E of M modulo N E of K. Intersect. Yeah. So that's the kernel of this map, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now you define a map from the kernel of this to
the map from Gal M over K.
From Gal M over K to that maps to E I guess M.
Yeah, to again the
what's that
and Tars. E of K and Tars.
Is it E of K or is it E of M?
E of M, yeah.
Yeah, E of M. And Tars. Okay. Excellent. Okay, so you've defined a map from the kernel to this, and now you need to, so this is clearly finite, because this is a finite set. This is a finite set, and certainly even just the set theoretic maps, you took all of them, you still have finite. So this is a clearly a finite group. So to finish your proof, you have to convince me that this homomorphism of groups has finite kernel.
Yeah, so if lambda of P equals lambda of something else.
So if lambda P equals lambda P prime, or you know, P and P prime, here, okay.
Then Q prime minus Q has to belong to E of K.
Okay, because we have, what you have is that sigma Q minus Q is equal to sigma Q prime. Q prime is the, so P prime equals N Q prime. Sigma Q prime minus Q prime. And that means that sigma of Q minus Q prime plus Q minus Q prime. So Q minus Q prime. And this is for all sigma in Gal M over K. So that means Q minus Q prime is in E of K. Okay.
So P minus P prime is in N E of K.
Okay, let's see. P minus P prime is in N E of K. Because after all, you multiply this by N, you get P minus P prime. Sure.
So they're in the same course.
That's right. So P lambda P prime. So in fact, you've proved that this map is injective. So you've now injected the kernel into a finite group, and hence the kernel of this map is finite. So if E of M mod any of M is finite, then E of K mod any of K is finite. Very good.
This book
explains that very nicely.
Yes.
Excellent. Any questions?
How did we know the whatever is finite?
The bottom hum?
Yeah.
Explain.
Well, Galois group is finite and finitely many torsion points.
I guess that's certainly true. Okay.
Okay. Emily.
Yes.
Excellent. Not Elizabeth. Okay, so we have this, and that means that we really can put ourselves in the context when we have this assumption. So now our goal is to prove the modulo of A theorem. And amazingly enough, all you have to do is these two things right here. And we'll have it. We reduce to the case when the N torsion is all defined over our base field. That's over there. Wasn't really that hard. Now, if we can show that the fields you get from points are unramified outside of N and prime's a bad reduction, and we can show there are only finitely many such fields, then we'll have proved the weak modulo of A theorem. And consequently, from what Andre did last time, the strong modulo of A theorem. So let's see. I think what I'll do is work on the first one before erasing everything. Once we have the first one out of the way, we can completely forget about elliptic curves. The second statement is a statement that has nothing to do with elliptic curves. It's purely an algebraic number theory statement. It says if you have any field at all, K, with the nth roots of unity in it, the nearly 500 many extensions of that field that had their abelian of exponent n and unramified outside of a finite set. So if you fix a finite set, you fix an n, you have the nth root of unity in there, and you have this finiteness statement about the extensions. So think about the case n equals 2 in Q. This is the statement that there are only finitely many quadratic extensions of Q that are unramified outside a finite set. So if you choose your favorite list of primes, your favorite finite list of primes, you'll find a whole bunch of extensions whose discriminant has support on those primes, but you're not going to find infinitely many, because you won't have infinitely large powers of those primes appearing in discriminants of quadratic extensions.
Were these on the wrong side for this week? Or
what?
Were these on the wrong side for this week? For Thursday?
Maybe something like this. What exactly was on the problem set? This statement right here? Because if it is...
I don't have a problem.
Where are you? There's an important input to this on the problem set.
But the first one,
no.
Or, no, okay.
So the first one, the typo here, a principal ideal domain, the same thing as a principal ideal. This is one step in this proof that I want to leave as an exercise, and that's why it's in the problem set. Okay? So onward, let's do the first thing, and then I'll be able to erase everything about elliptic curves, and we'll just forget about elliptic curves while we do the second. And, of course, the second part gives you a nice tool. Okay, so we need to show LP is unramified outside of N and primes of bound reduction.
So the argument in the notes is contained in its theorem 12.6.1 on page 128. And we're going to use a statement that follows from a statement about the arithmetic of elliptic curves, which follows from existence of formal groups, and I'll just make the statement and then prove this result using that statement. So here's the statement. If you have a P, then you have N. We have an integer N greater than or equal to 2. Then if we choose Q such that NQ equals P, then we can ask, you know, what is the field? Well, write it then. Field K adjoin the coordinates of Q. I mean, I have a slightly different statement here, so maybe I'll make the statement that's in there. So K adjoin all coordinates of choices of Q. So Q is, it's just a slightly stronger statement. Choices of Qs, this is ramified outside N and primes of bound reduction. For the elliptic curve. Bound reduction means, again, if you have an elliptic curve and you say choose a Weierstrass equation for it, then if you have a prime of bound reduction, then modulo that prime, the Weierstrass equation will not define an elliptic curve over the finite field. It'll give you a singular curve. And you could choose a very bad Weierstrass equation that has, for which the actual equation has bound reduction, lots of primes. But to make the definition better, you say that a prime is a prime of bound reduction if for every single choice of Weierstrass equation, when you reduce, you get a singular curve. So there you are. And it's a prime of good reduction otherwise.
So consider these then disfields and ramified outside of n and primes about reduction. So this is analogous to one of your homework problems, which
is you take the nth root of an element A, and there you have to say something about where this field is ramified. And it's ramified only at n and the norm. It can be ramified only at n and the norm of A.
Primes dividing the norm of A. So this is completely analogous to that. It says when you take an nth root of a point on an elliptic curve, the ramification is only at n, and at somehow the primes of bad reduction for the curve, which is similar to the norm of A. So a very concrete example,
again, quadratic extension of Q. Suppose you join the square root of an element A. What kind of field is this? Well,
it could certainly, it typically is ramified at the primes that divide A, assuming A is square free, but it could also be ramified at 2. You're taking a square root. For example,
Q adjoins square root of minus 1. This is ramified at 2. It has discriminant 4, so it's ramified at, or minus 1. It's ramified at 2.
So you have the exponent, and then you also have the thing down here. And then this is just the analog, except the proof is somewhat different. But it's just the analog. Okay, proof. Okay, here's the formal group's input gives the following statement, and I'm not going to use formal groups, so I'm just going to tell you what you get from it. It's the one part I won't prove. So I'll just say fact, which one could prove using formal groups, and maybe Andre did prove. If you have a prime of good reduction, so if T prime of good reduction, and n is coprime to p, then, so since p is a prime of good reduction, you have a map from E of k to, you can take the equation that defines the elliptic curve and you get an elliptic curve over the finite field, ok, modulo p. And so this map, there's no reason to expect this to be injective. Why shouldn't you expect this map to be injective?
Because there are lots of points in E of k.
Yeah. E of k can easily be infinite, whereas this thing on the right is always finite. There's no hope that you could prove this is injective, since this is typically infinite. But if you take just the n-torsion subgroup, it is injective. And the reason for that is that if you replace k by the completion of k at the prime ideal p, which is a local field, it's a finite extension of some p-adic, the field of p-adic numbers qp, then the kernel of this map is the points of a formal group, and hence it's a pro-p group. So the only torsion that you can have in there is p-torsion, and n is coprime to p. So that's the argument. That's an argument for this. Andre, how much of that did you do, if any?
I explained how to do the correspondence between that and the formal group.
Okay. All right. Good. So, in any case, if nothing else, just take this statement of faith that this torsion injects as a fact. And now, using this fact, I will deduce this statement. By the way, notice that you can get that the torsion subgroup of E of k is finite from this, almost. So you just choose. You can choose any n here you like at all, as long as it's coprime to p. So for one p, you choose a huge n, and you can't keep getting bigger and bigger things here because they're all injecting into exactly the same finite group. So the prime to p part of the torsion subgroup is finite. You see that from this fact. However, you can do this for two different primes. So if you do it for a prime p and a prime q, then you get that the prime to p part of the torsion subgroup is finite, and the prime to q part of the torsion subgroup is finite, which implies the torsion subgroup is finite. Right. So this has just this nice implication that p of q tor is finite. And very fast aside, if you fix a number field k, like k equals q, there's a theorem that you have a certain explicit list of possibilities for this group,
and it's a more a 10-year-old theorem of Loïc Merel, which is an open conjecture for very long, that if you take any number field K at all and consider every single elliptic curve over that number field and look at all their torsion subgroups, the resulting set of groups is a finite set. There are only finitely many possibilities for the torsion subgroup of an elliptic curve over any fixed number field. In fact, even better, if you take this set is fine. If you take all elliptic, if you fix an integer d, consider td, which is the set of all elliptic curves torsion subgroups for e over k and k any degree less than or equal to d extension of q, then this set of groups is finite. Td is finite. So if you take all elliptic curves over all quadratic extensions of Q, there's only finitely many torsion subgroups that you'll find. So that's this theorem. There's even explicit bounds on the number of groups. But okay, so now to prove this, here's what you do. We're going to use the inertia group and sort of things that look familiar from before in the course. Okay, so okay, what is it? So P is a prime of good reduction that doesn't divide n. This is exactly a prime for which I want to show that this extension here. This is actually also P. I want to show that this extension is unramified outside of P. So we want if P doesn't ramify, in L sub capital P. Capital P is the point. So that prime ideal doesn't ramify there. Okay, so here's what you do. You take the inertia group, I sub P, which is contained in the decomposition group at P, which is, of course, a subgroup of the Galois group, KL over K, LP over K. So the Galois group of this extension, K adjoint all the coordinates, over K. What we need to do is show that if you have any element sigma in here, I want to show that sigma fixes Q. Because if we had that, then we know that, in fact, every element in the inertia group acts trivially on this extension, which would mean the inertia group is trivial, which is exactly the same as proving that the extension is unramified at P. So we want that sigma Q equals Q, because that would have the implication, that would imply that sigma is actually just for all the choices of Q. That would imply sigma is equal to 1. Because sigma is just an element of automorphisms of a field generated by the coordinates of these Qs. Okay, so how can you prove sigma of Q is equal to Q? Any ideas? Well, we're going to use this. So you have so sigma of Q minus Q, that's in E squared brackets N. That's what I showed right here. And E squared brackets N injects into E tilde O mod P. Let's let pi be this reduction method. So actually, I'm going to apply it a little bit more generally. So more generally, pi is just pi is the map from E of K to E tilde
stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Actually, I need to.
For E of L.
I need to.
This for E of L.
There's a mistake in my proof as I've written it down here. Okay, so there's a mistake in my proof. It doesn't make sense to write I sub P, because P is a prime ideal of K, and I want to prove something about prime ideals of L. There's no inertia group attached to a prime ideal of K. You only have inertia groups attached to prime ideals of L. So how to fix this? So certainly just change these to L, and just make P a prime of L, I think. P a prime of OL of over a prime of good reduction so just make this L. I mean, you get exactly the same formal group stuff over L when you have this reduction map. Okay, and here this is OL more P, everything else is fine. So, and L is like this also. Okay, so I just changed my prime as an OL, not okay. That's the only difference. Okay, so you have this reduction map. You have reduction. So now here's the trick. You take take pi of sigma q minus q, and that's equal to pi sigma q minus pi q. Reduction is a homomorphism. And that's equal to sigma pi q minus pi q. But sigma is the identity map on the reduction. The inertia group is exactly the kernel of the homomorphism on automorphism groups to the reduction. So this is equal to pi of q minus pi of q, but that's zero, of course. So that means that sigma of q minus q is in the kernel of reduction, but it's also an EN. And this map is injective. That means that sigma of q minus q has to be zero. So sigma of q minus q equals zero. And that's exactly what we wanted. That shows us that sigma of q is equal to q. Yes?
Wait, so are we now thinking of the inertia group as a subgroup of gal L over L, which...
No, of gal L over K.
Even though P is in L? P is a prime in L?
Yeah. Yeah, the inertia group's in the Galois group of the extension.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, the mistake before was that I had, I don't know if I explicitly written that down, but I was thinking of P, at least in the notes, as a prime of K, and then you don't have an inertia group there.
Right.
Except maybe as a subgroup of Gal K over Q, if K happened to be a Galois extension. But, I mean, K is just some arbitrary. This is the only Galois extension. And I'm just going to erase the sub P, because there's too many P's. Okay, so that actually proves it. We've shown that sigma of q minus q is zero, which means that sigma fixes q. So every element of the inertia group fixes every q, but L is just generated by the coordinates of the q's. So sigma acts trivially on everything that generates this extension, which means that sigma is the identity element here, which means the entire inertia group is trivial, which means that this extension is unramified at p, which proves the theorem. So, in order to prove the weak Mortal Maid theorem, we just need to prove a circled statement over here. Okay, questions? So now we're completely reduced to a statement purely in algebraic number 3. Why? Because E of K mod P E of K maps to finite abelian extensions of exponent n. And they're unramified at these primes. So the only ramification could be at n, or primes of bad reduction. Otherwise you have an argument like this that shows it's unramified. So amazingly, we're now reduced to some nice algebraic number 3 statement. Any questions? All right. So, back to algebraic number 3. Now you can completely forget for the moment about elliptic curves, we now have a statement we want to prove. We want to prove it. It's a nice looking statement. Here it is. There are finitely many exponent and abelian extensions of K unramified outside a finite set of primes. So theorem, the statement K, number field, without loss, I mean, we might as well just assume that mu n is contained in K, and say S is a finite set of primes. Then there are finitely many exponent and abelian extensions unramified outside a finite, unramified outside of S. So we want to prove this theorem. If you have a number field K that contains the nth roots of unity, and you have a finite set of primes, then there are finitely many exponent and abelian extensions unramified outside that set. Once we have that, we will prove the weak Mordell Bay theorem. And you might not, you know, have thought to bother to prove something like this if you weren't motivated by Mordell Bay theorem, but it might. Okay, so let's prove this. So the proof is theorem 12.5.1 on page 126. And here we go. So first observation is you can enlarge S. If you enlarge S, you just increase the number of extensions. So if you can prove finiteness of the number of such extensions for a much larger set S, a set that's larger in the sense that it contains S and maybe has more primes in it, then you certainly get this statement. So without loss, we can throw in as many things as we want to S. So without loss, we can always enlarge S. So just keep that in mind, because all that does is just increase the number of fields of that property. So if you can prove it for some huge S, prove the finiteness, then we'll have no finiteness for the original S. Okay, so here's how you do it. Consider this ring, OKS, which is the elements in K such that ord P of the element greater than or equal to 0 for all P not in S. So if S were the empty set, this would simply be OK, the ring of integers. So think about this a little more. The statement ord P of A is greater than or equal to 0 simply means that when you look at the factorization of the principal fractional ideal A, assuming A is non-zero, so it's some product, you know, QI to EI, you want that the only time you have negative exponents is when QI is in S. So in some sense, you're allowing denominators at elements of S, at primes in S, but nowhere else. So when S is the empty set, you're not allowing any denominators. You can tell whether or not something is an element of OK by just looking at its principal, its ideal factorization. If all the exponents are non-negative, then you know that the thing was in OK. So that's why OK empty set is just OK. But you can do this for any finite set. And you get a ring that has proper, it's a Dedekind domain. And the things we proved about ring, well, the things we proved about Dedekind domains, like unique factorization, everything works in OKS. The only difference is that, it's really just like OK, but you've, in a sense, deleted, you've made into units the primes in S. So each element of OKS, if you take the ideal it generates, it will factor uniquely as a product of primes, but primes of OKS, and so primes not in S. So any A in OKS, you have a factorization. A is product QI times OKS to the EI, and these QI are not in S. So it's just exactly like the theory we developed so far, except you've made finitely many primes into units. It's just like localization of a ring.
If you know how commutative algebra. But very explicitly, you're just taking all the elements, though, that their ordered p, that is, the power of p occurring in the prime ideal factorization, is greater than or equal to 0 at the p not in S. So you only allow denominators in S. So let's enlarge S so that OKS is a PID. And I think that is a homework problem.
And the idea of that is the following. You take OK. We know the class group of OK is finite, so you can list generators for the class group. In fact, you can find primes, P1 through PG, so that the class group is generated by those primes. For example, take all primes up to the Minkowski bound, because those will generate the class group. You just make S contain those primes, and then those primes have all been changed to units in this ring, and every single ideal of the ring is a product of those primes, but all those primes are, let's see. Every single ideal in the ring is equivalent, modulo a principal ideal, to a product of those primes. Those primes are all units, so every single thing in the ring is in fact a principal ideal.
So we do this by including generators for the class group of OK in S. If you include generators for the class group of OK in S, then every ideal I, since it'll be a product of those generators for the class group, it'll be equivalent, modulo principal ideal, to a product of these. I will be a principal ideal in OKS. So this implies the ideals of OKS are principal. But it's a homework problem, so I'm omitting a little bit in the way of details. But notice it's crucial that the class group is finite here. If the class group were not finite, you'd have to throw in infinitely many primes, and then we wouldn't be able to prove the thing we want to prove. So here we've used finiteness of the class group, which is certainly a non-trivial thing. So over here, finiteness of class group. Okay, so now we have a principal ideal domain OKS, and let's use this fact. So now we're on page 127, and I'm going to give a collection of things that generate the maximal unramified outside of S exponent n abelian extension. And we know they generate by Kummer theory, or just a slight refinement of what I did in class last week on Tuesday. So here's how it works. So consider the following set, or actually group, KS n. So this is the A in K star mod K star to the N. So remember, every abelian extension of degree dividing N of K, when K contains the nth roots of unity, is generated by adjoining an nth root of something in here. Now you might ask, why in the heck does K contain the nth roots of unity? Well, it does here because of my hypothesis. But for an elliptic curve, if we just start with an elliptic curve and then we go up to a bigger field where you have all of the n torsion of the elliptic curve, might you also have to go up to an even bigger field to get the nth roots of unity? And the answer is you don't have to. You don't ever have to. But even if you did, that wouldn't be a problem, because all that we used here was that this field M contains the n torsion of the elliptic curve, and it's finite. Actually, you probably didn't even use that it contains the n torsion of the curve. All we're using here is that this extension is finite. So you could just, throw in addition the n roots of unity. But in fact, there's something called the Weyl pairing on an elliptic curve, which you can use to show that the nth roots of unity are automatically contained in this field right here. There's no issue with that. Yes?
Can't we say that n equals 2 throughout and then all the...
N equals what?
N equals 2. ghost region.
Yes, for the, you're right. Yes, once you, so you do have the implication E of K mod 2 E of K finite implies E of K finitely generated, which would imply E of K mod N E of K finite for all N. So, in fact, you can do all these arguments in a special case of N equals 2, and you would get the theorem that I'm trying to prove. Yes, but I'm not going to do that, because it's true in general. And, for example, this statement is nice to know independent of anything else, and it's nice to have a bigger N. Also, the ideas that go into this proof, for example, considering the set KSN, which is equal to the A in K star mod K star to the N, such that N divides ord P of A for all P not in S. Considering these, even for N not equal to 2, are extremely important in actually computing Mordell vague groups of elliptic curves. People do use N equal 2 usually, but it's also important and interesting to consider N equals 4 and N equals 3. Those also play an important role, at least computationally. N equals 5 sometimes. And you can prove some interesting statements. Like if you want to understand congruent number problems, then N equals... Oh, wait, never mind about that. Okay, so here's a set, a group actually. It's the group of elements with the property that when you look at the factorization of A, so it's saying nothing at all about the primes that divide, that are in S, about their property relative to A, but outside of S, this thing is just a perfect nth power, at least on the level of ideals. This just says that the ideal generated by A, so A, okay, S, this ideal is a perfect nth power. Well, that's what this says, actually. This is the same condition. Because here I'm saying that each prime that appears in the factorization here appears to a perfect nth power. So if you have an ideal, and when you look at its factorization, every prime appearing in it is a perfect nth power, you just take, you can find an ideal, which is just divide all the exponents in the factorization by n. You get another ideal whose nth power is this ideal. So that's what the condition is. So so KSN, so here's a fact. So KSN, if you let L be the field, you take all nth roots of A, such that A represents an element of KSN. So strictly speaking, I should write the class of A here. A, the class of A is in KSN, then this is the maximal unramified outside S abelian exponent N. So let's see, I need K of this abelian exponent N extension of K. So a reason that you might believe this is that Krummer theory says every such extension is got by adjoining roots of things like this, and I'm just saying here that in addition the unramified outside of S condition translates into this. So I'm not proving every detail of that, but it's true. So now what I need to show is that KSN is a finite group. If you know KSN is a finite group, that makes L a finite extension. And that completes the, now we complete the proof of the weak Mordell vague theorem. So claim the group, and this won't be so hard. The group K, S, N is finite. It's nice though, it's a nice argument. And this slightly refined version of Krummer theory that I've written down right here tells you that this being finite implies that L is a finite extension. So claim the group is finite, and this, notice that this implies L over K finite, which would complete the proof. Okay, so why is this group finite? Well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to define a map from the units of OKS. So remember, OKS is this slightly bigger ring that contains OK. where we've turned some of the primes into units, made them unit ideal. So OKS star, if you have a unit, you need to find a map like this and prove it's surjective. And then I'll prove that this group is finitely generated, and that will imply that this group is finite, because it's it would then be finitely generated and torsion. Okay, first, do you have a how do you get a well-defined map here? So let's see. What notation do I use for the map? Phi. So why do you have a map at all? So we need to check that if you have a unit, then it satisfies this condition. So this is a unit in OKS. Being a unit says that in OKS, this ideal is the unit ideal, so certainly it's going to be an nth power. So we have a well-defined map. Now we need to show that it's surjective and that this is finitely generated. And that will complete the proof. So first we'll do surjective. Okay, so claim phi is surjective. All right, so let's take an element of KSN. Take A in K S N. And because A is in KSN, that means that the element A times OKS is the nth power of some ideal. Now remember, we haven't used this yet, but remember we made OKS into a principal ideal domain. Now we're going to use that. I is a principal ideal. So this is alpha to the power of n. And if you have one principal ideal equal to another principal ideal, the generators differ by a unit. So this implies that A is equal to a unit times alpha to the n, where here u is a unit in OKS. So A is a unit times alpha to the n, working modulo nth powers. So the class of A is equal to the class of U, but that's actually just the image under phi of U. So this map is surjective. All right, now all that remains is to prove that this is finitely generated, and then we'll finish. We'll be done. And that is the S unit there. So if S were the empty set, I would just be claiming that the unit group of the ring of integers is a finitely generated group. We prove that it's not only a finitely generated group, it's a finitely generated group of rank r plus s minus 1. So let's prove that it's finitely generated in general when you have an s. And this will just be, it's just an additional argument on top of what we already know. So fact that we proved the Dirichlet unit theorem. The Dirichlet unit theorem says that OK star is finitely generated. So I'm going to use this to prove that OKS star is finitely generated, and I'll compute its rank. So here's how you do it. That's what Dirichlet unit says. So now proof generalization, prove S unit theorem. So here's how you do it. Take OKS star, and you map it to z to the n, z to the m, where m is the number of elements of s. So here we have s equal to p1 through pm. And the map I'll use, I'll call it v. It takes a unit to a sequence of integers ord p1 of a unit, all the way up through ord pm of the unit. And these aren't all zero because this is a unit, but only in OK S star. For a unit, like a genuine unit in OK star, then these would all be zero. In fact, what I just told you is that this map has OK star in its kernel. In fact, the exact kernel of this map is OK star. If you have a unit in OK S star, so if you have an element here, and well, the fact it's a unit in here means that at the primes outside of S, it's really a unit. The valuation is zero at the primes outside of S. If it's in the kernel of this map, also at the primes in S, it's a unit, because these are all zero. So the kernel of this map is exactly OK star. So now we have an exact sequence, 0, 1, OK star, OK S star, and then this. And what we need, well, actually, we've now proved that OKS star is finally generated, haven't we? Because OKS star, this group, modulo this finitely generated subgroup, is contained in a finitely generated group. So that means that OKS star itself is finitely generated, which is good. In fact, we can do a little better, just for fun, so to speak. Let's show that the image of this here is a finite index. And that will imply that not only is OKS star finitely generated, but its rank is exactly the rank of OK star plus the number of primes S that you added in, so plus M. So in fact, rank of OK S star is equal to R plus S minus 1, that's the rank of OK star, plus the cardinality S. A nice generalization. Okay, so why is this map? Why does this map have finite co-kernel? So finite index image. And here's the reason. So let's let H be the class number of K, which is finite. Class number. Okay. And consider the V of U to the, let's see, wait, hold on. I need to use a trick here. So, okay, then Pi to the power of H, well, you're taking this ideal of OK and raising it to the power of the class number. So, certainly you're going to get a unit, I mean, you're going to get a principal ideal. It's the ideal generated by some element, which I'll call. B. So just to emphasize where I'm working, B times OK. Now, and notice that if you take the fractional, take the ideal P and factor it, the only prime that appears is this Pi. Therefore, B is an element of OK S star. To be an S unit, the requirement is that the prime ideal factorization of your element involve only primes that are in S. And that's certainly the case here, because these PRs are the primes in S. So you get B here. And now look at what happens to B under this map V. V of B, well, at all the primes not equal to Pi, at all the other primes, the valuation is just zero. At the prime Pi, the valuation is H. And at all the other primes, it's zero. So you get that the image certainly contains, the image of V contains H, the class number, times Z to the M. And that's a finite index subgroup of Z to the M. So now we've proved the S unit theorem. And we know the rank of this group, so we know it's finitely generated. Knowing it's finitely generated implies that KSN is a finite group, which implies that this extension is finite, which means that this theorem over here, that the set of abelian extensions of exponent n and ramify outside of S is finite, and that implies the weak Mortel-Vey theorem, which implies raising heights, the strong Mortel-Vey theorem. So I've proved the strong Mortel-Vey theorem over a number of fields. I'll just a few little details, but I hope you've got a good flavor of what goes into this and how it really is extremely natural application of pretty much everything in the first part of the course. Okay, so we have 3 minutes, and I'll stop slightly early. Just to say again, the homework, there will be no new homework that's due during reading week. Instead, next Thursday, not this coming Thursday, but next Thursday, I just want you to send some draft of your project, something. The only purpose of doing that is to get feedback. You will not be graded in any way on that. It's just for your benefit.
When is it due?
The project will be due on the last day of reading week, which I think is May 18th.
And does this statement apply to the current sound set?
The current problem set is due this Thursday.
This Thursday.
Yeah. There's just no new homework ever again in this class. And on Thursday, I'm going to talk about the Bertrand-Sorensen Dyer conjecture and tell you about modern progress and highly non-trivial theorems about it.
I didn't say anything wrong.
Oh, I see 15 plus.
15 plus whatever is.
Wait, hold on, there's nothing wrong with it though? It's just that there's nothing.
I mean,
if there's nothing wrong with it, it's right.
But you can use Fermat's theorem and prove a lot of problems, but that doesn't mean that.
Oh, I see. Do you use a bunch of hammers? Or sledgehammers? I don't know, do you? Andre, exactly which problem are you referring to?
One.
Okay, problem one.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
In notes, you say that OKS is a related domain.
That's correct.
So we have to prove that, right? In context. Because otherwise,
I think you should prove that.
Because you do everything except.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just a Dedekind domain. And there's a definition.
Yeah.
Dimension one. Every primordial maximal that starts. Yeah.
That's not true.
Question
about about the draft.
Thanks, sir. For the opportunity.
Sure. All right. I started working on my draft and everything, but next Thursday is the last day of classes at MIT, so there's a whole bunch of stuff due then. So like if
just turn in a day late. All right,
or if
two days
draft,
late. Yeah. All right,
or if the draft isn't complete, but I've made substantial progress.
Yeah, that's fine. You're not going to be graded on it anyway. It's purely for your benefit.
Okay.
I'm going to look at all the drafts people send me for a few minutes, see what pops into my head, see if they're going in the right direction and so on or not, and then say tell them. So it's just an opportunity for you to get some feedback from me outside of kind of just coming and talking to me casually or in office hours. That's all.
Okay.
And it's not for a grade at all. So
all right, thanks. Yeah, I'll send in what I have. It's just that
yeah.
I'm